Welcome back to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media. I'm your host, Jared Morris. At the end of our last episode, I suggested that you grab the free new Rainmaker content library while it's still free. It's 7 lessons and 3 webinars by Brian Clark that teach you how to generate a flood of new business with the power of your digital media platform. Let me give you that link again. It's newrainmaker.com/register. Don't procrastinate, because at some point this won't be free anymore. And speaking of generating business with a digital media platform, it all starts by having the right content strategy in place, which is what Damian Farnworth and I are in the midst of talking about here on The Lead. Here is part 2 of our 3-part series on content strategy. In our last episode, we discussed the importance of identifying and understanding the worldviews of your audience. What does your audience believe about the world? And more importantly, why? And what can you do with this information? Today, we take the next step. Once you are able to empathize with your audience, you are ready to connect with your audience. And within the context of content marketing, that means connecting in a way that gets your audience to know you, to like you, to trust you, and ultimately to buy from you. In other words, in the words of Damian Farnworth, in fact, you want to ignite a feeling that inspires a commercial transaction. You want to, as Damian wrote on Copyblogger, lift your prospects out of their ordinary worlds and invite them to consider a journey that ultimately leads to a transaction. But I suppose I can stop quoting Damian now, since he's on the other end of the line, and let him speak for himself. So, Mr. Farnworth, it all sounds great, but how do you do it? How do you bridge the gap between understanding your audience and igniting a feeling within them?
You know, igniting a feeling that inspires a commercial transaction, that's content marketing at its best. You have a prospect who's hell-bent on finding what she wants, and she has an agenda, and that agenda probably doesn't include you, so you have to create content in which engages her. You have to create a blog series that answers her most pressing needs or satisfies her curiosity, and you have to do it in a manner that appeals to the way she thinks, feels, and acts. And that's why this is what we're going to talk about today, ultimately storyboarding, is that it's a gentle, non-threatening way to open up the relationship, one where you respect your prospect, and ultimately your prospect recognizes and respects your authority, and then she eventually, ultimately, views spending money with you as a sound investment, right? So we talk about storyboarding. We talk about, we talked about the worldview. We talked about the idea of understanding who your audience is, understanding your customer, and how it is she thinks about the world. So that's the big picture. And so with this, we're going to create a narrative in which relates to her, which resonates with her. And a lot of times, probably any fan, any reader of Copyblogger has heard us use the term hero's journey before. It's a framework that we've used that basically says every great marketing story has a hero, has a goal, has an obstacle, has a mentor, and ultimately has a morale. And that's the hero's journey. That framework there is really an abbreviated version of Joseph Campbell's idea of the hero's journey that he wrote about in his book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. So the question you have to ask, right, is why is this important? Why is this framework and not another one?
Can I back up for 1 second, Damian?
Yeah, go ahead.
The hero's journey, which you're right. I mean, that's something that we've used so often on Copyblogger. In that framework, it's very important to understand who the hero is, right? So who, within that framework and within this context of content marketing that we're talking about, who is the hero in that journey?
So the hero is the customer, right? I mean, it's the customer. So the idea with the hero's journey, real quick, the idea with the hero's journey is she's the customer. Your customer is the hero, right? She has a goal. She wants to see a better version of herself. But there's some obstacle that's keeping her back from that goal, right? You as the business then have to come in as the mentor and guide her towards that, help her to overcome a teacher how to overcome those obstacles to reach her goal. And as Sonia so elegantly positions in her article on this topic, she says that it's important that you don't do it for her. It's important that she struggles through the obstacle herself. You just give her the tools, right? You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi did not defeat the dark side. He just, you know, introduced Luke Skywalker to his goal, what he needed to do. So the business is the mentor, and you teach them, and then the morale is basically telling them what they need to do next.
Okay, so if I may play devil's advocate here for a second, why do we have to go through all of this? I mean, we're selling widgets, or we're selling a, you know, some kind of course, or we're selling this, that, or the other. Why can't we just give people, you know, the features, what they'll learn, give them a, you know, kind of tell them the facts? Why do we have to go through all this storytelling and all the, you know, defining heroes and doing all this stuff to like you said, ignite that feeling?
So, well, here's what we're dealing with, right? We're dealing with an idea called content shock. It was Mark Schaefer who kind of framed that idea, but it's not a new idea. He didn't come up with this, and it's not something that's new to content marketing. All this idea of content shock is that we have so much information coming at us. It's become a cliche almost, but this has been true throughout history. We always have more information that we can consume, and so we're kind of flooded with all this information. So your job is to stand out within that content shock, within that information. And so you have to create a narrative. You have to create your marketing story that people recognize. Because I mean, the thing is, like, people can, like, there's so many smart people out there who have pretty much already presented the facts in a pretty straightforward manner. They said, this is what you need to know, and here's how you do it. So if you're coming in behind that, the market that's already saturated, you have a commodity, well, you have to build a story around that commodity in order to rise above the noise and get noticed. For example, right? So I wrote a series on native advertising, and I noticed as I went through all my research that there were a lot of very smart people who already kind of covered the topic, but they simply just presented the facts. I needed to figure out a way to present the information we were going to give to our readers through a story, some sort of narrative, so that they saw themselves as the hero, they saw the goal, they recognized the obstacle, and we helped them overcome that obstacle. Then we told them what to do next. And so that's why it's important to have some sort of framework. If you don't use the hero's journey, but you know, there's lots of, you know, lots of sort of storytelling arcs out there that you can get a hold of and use. As long as you have some sort of scaffolding, though, that's important. As long as you're telling some sort of story, and a scaffolding helps you tell that particular story.
So you're saying that even though there is so much content out there, right? There's, it seems like 10 billion blog posts published every day. There's still a way to get heard above the noise if you do something new, something compelling, something that has some kind of narrative arc or something that grabs an audience member. You're saying you can still make a difference and get your content seen and read and respected if you do that.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about Copyblogger in itself, right? I mean, Brian Clark kind of entered this field back in 2006. He didn't share anything original. I mean, what he was teaching wasn't original. It had been taught before. He just took it and presented it in a different format, in a story that recognized and resonated with the audience he wanted to attract. For that audience was those who were both direct response copywriting killers, but plus the sort of poetic misfit side of things. That's why he used a lot of references to Depeche Mode, to, you know, punk rock, to Nirvana, to Boston, all these cultural references, which brought what he was doing above what has already been said. And we can all do this in the same thing. A lot of what this really happens, how this happens naturally for people, is just presenting their personality and presenting their own story, right? And people hear that story, and then they say, that's a lot like my story. And so they come around, and they get very interested in what you're doing.
So storytelling to me is interesting because I think it's actually more simple than a lot of people think, but it's not as easy necessarily as people may think. So talk about this process of telling the story and how you organize it to tell it in a compelling way.
So, right. Yeah. I mean, storytelling is difficult because We think that you have a character, and then the common mistake people have is that they forget the conflict part of it. You know, the princess who becomes the great ballerina is not a story. It's an observation. What you have to do, though, is create a story in which there is a conflict and which is meaningful to your customer, to your audience. And so the process in which I use, and I try to teach other people to use, this idea of storyboarding, but what it really begins with is this idea of who's your ideal audience. And it always begins with that. You will hear us probably sound like a broken record. It's the only song we will ever sing, but you have to know your audience before you do even anything. And in the next episode, we'll talk about how to understand this, some ways to understand this audience, you know, including using what we call the empathy map. But first, discover your ideal audience. Then inform your hunch. As you're sort of picking up and learning about your audience, you begin to know them, you'll begin to think about them, you'll start to sort of make predictions about who they are and how they respond to certain things. And then what you need to do is then inform your hunch. You'll sort of create a theory about who these people are. Then you need to go do some research, right, and figure out if your hunch is true. For example, when I was doing the native advertising series, I had a hunch that most people in the marketing world, even in the marketing world, didn't know what native advertising was. So I had to do some research. And so I searched in search engines, you know, did topical keyword research, conducted a few interviews. But ultimately, the main source of all that information came from a survey that we did, which we had, you know, over 2,100 respondents telling us basically what I figured was true, that not a lot of people knew about it. So you gather that information about your audience, inform your hunch, then you pull all your resources together, and then you create a narrative, right? And so this process looks like this, right? So this is kind of where the storyboarding idea comes in. You pull your resources together, you make post-it notes, if you have a large whiteboard, put those on the whiteboard, or use a dry erase marker. Create this list of categories, start, you know, to systematically work through your notes, putting all this information on the board. And then from that, you can create a narrative. Now, the interesting thing is, and so this is where the storyboarding idea comes from, right? And storyboarding is basically creating scenes, is creating the movie before you actually even create the movie. This was a technique actually developed by Disney in their animation films. And Andrew Adamson, who is the director of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in Shrek 2, he said that, you know, storyboarding is an expensive writing tool because you are going through every single scene and creating the movie, right? You're creating the animation, creating the short video. But really, ultimately, what it is, it's a really inexpensive production tool because if you storyboard something, this comes all down to preparation. If you storyboard something, you'll learn whether it's a viable idea before you ever actually put any money, real money, heavy duty money into it. So you create the storyboard, and this means you don't have to be a great artist to do this either. Just simple sketches help you work through that. But the idea of storyboarding really in our sense, if you're creating, say, a blog series, is just saying, okay, so what is the, you know, how is this narrative? How is all this information going to fit in the long run? Because when I was doing that native advertising and, you know, when I was doing that Google Plus authorship series last year, I had a ton of information and I had to sort it through and make it meaningful. It has to sort of have some sort of meaningful sequence work through that so people can relate to it and people could view it and recognize it as something that's not that's been repackaged and repurposed in a new way, in a more interesting way, hopefully, too, ultimately, because that's what you're after, is that story. And then so you create this narrative, and then you ultimately find the hook. And I've said this before, like the hook for the native advertising series was this idea of the old guard journalist, right, fighting against this new advertising revenue, but it's actually an old story. And then with the Google Plus series, it was this idea of Hunter S. Thompson, the idea of not wanting to fall into obscurity, but using writing to put a stamp, like, on the world, to put your own little dent into the universe. And Google authorship could have helped do that. So they've since pulled that, so that's a moot point. But anyway, find the hook. Then you can repurpose this content ultimately, and we'll talk about this later on some future podcasts too, but we'll ultimately repurpose that content. So you're creating this narrative And once you have this narrative and you figure out how, say, this blog series is going to roll out, then you can think about next, like, say, how am I going to create that infographic? All right, well, what about a podcast series? How would that look? And it's almost all that work for those other formats is done for you. So it's really easy. That's why people might think there's a lot of preparation behind doing this storyboarding thing. Well, the thing is, once you do the early work, you can kind of relax after that because a lot of the work is already done for you for those other formats that you can then roll out the content.
Yeah, so a couple quick comments here. Number one, I want to go back to what you said about informing your hunch because I think it's very important. You know, you start out with this hunch, with this hypothesis, but as you go through, you also have to be open-minded to the fact that you may be wrong. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. in your post on this, which we'll link in the show notes, you quote Brian Clark when he said, "You effectively need to grill yourself on your own assumptions and expectations of how you think this particular idea or industry or content marketing approach is going to go. Then you need to effectively try to disprove yourself. There is no fault or crime in being wrong as long as you find out you're wrong before it's too late." So I just want to underscore that point, how important it is to be open-minded and to let the research and what you find out tell the story, as opposed to just trying to tell the story you want to tell, even if what you're finding out is suggesting something else. And then the other thing that I want to ask, Damon, as we start to wrap this up, is about your process when it comes to storyboarding. You know, mm-hmm. I've seen the picture of your big whiteboard, you know, kind of just the mad scientist writing everywhere and all that. So what exactly is your process, and maybe what can you suggest to other folks who are listening about how to actually go about doing it, you know, doing this actual process of storyboarding?
Sure. So I the online research, I save a lot of my notes on Evernote, right? So I'll be reading articles and I will, copy selections from those articles, save those to Evernote, and just do that over as much research as I possibly can. If I'm reading a book, a lot of times I've gotten into the habit of I'll read a book, I'll make notes in the book, I'll put little ticklers there to show me where I'm going back. Then I'll actually go back to that book and then copy those lines out into Evernote so I have a list of the quotes out of that book. Then I take all that information and I sit down with my laptop in front of the whiteboard, blank whiteboard, and then I just start writing out these notes, just systematically writing out these notes, trying to piece them together, because you'll come across, say, you know, with the native advertising series, for example, there were several themes that kept coming up, but there were some things that would kind of lead astray. So I had to see the patterns and create categories on the board, and then take that information. You know, so if there was, from one article, if they were saying X, I would take X and put that underneath, you know, category A. And but in the same category, they're saying, or the same article, they were saying B and Y, I take that and put that under category B, and to systematically do that and just try to fit things into categories. And then after I have all that information and I make sure I, you know, sort of double check and make sure I've gone through all my sources, I will then, you know, look at the board and think about, okay, how is this going to flow, right? What's the narrative flow? What's the story behind this? What's the obstacle? I try to think, you know, what is the hero thinking? What's the goal, right? What's the goal behind native advertising? What's the goal behind Google Plus? Why should anybody care? You know, why should our customer care for that matter? So start asking these questions and thinking about how I, as a mentor, right, us copy bloggers as a mentor can then help, you know, sort of walk people through this new information, right? And to help them navigate this new information. And then from there on the board, I will start then, moving things around and you know, I'll either erase things or put arrows, or sometimes there'll be sticky notes that I can just move. Whatever process, I like to draw. I'm a tactile learner, so I like to use my hands. So I like the feeling of having, you know, a dry erase, you know, marker in my hand and marking things on the board, and sometimes drawing and sort of picturing what I'm doing. So I have this flow, I have this picture, this sort of, you know, blossoming story unfolding before me. And it's a big mess at first, you know, but then slowly over time I can kind of move that and kind of sculpt it into a single flowing, you know, what this really ultimately becomes is a giant outline for your, you know, for in this case, it was a blog series. You can do this for, you know, you can do this for individual articles. You could do this for podcasts. You could do this for a video. You know, the storyboarding helps in any of those formats.
Yeah. You know, doing a podcast about storyboarding is kind of an ironic choice because it's such a visual activity. And so we have three or four videos here that we're going to link in the show notes that people can watch about storyboarding. Any final thoughts just to, you know, about those videos to guide the listeners as they watch them?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, I found the one, you know, the purpose of storyboarding, it was basically the history of that was, you know, it was interesting. But the thing to note in this is again, that this helps you, this idea of storyboarding helps you in whatever you're creating, whether it is a video shoot, whether it's, you know, a podcast series, an infographic, it can help you kind of outline how that looks. So a lot of these are short, or, you know, they're anywhere from like 2 minutes to 13 minutes. So take your time, look through them, you know. So just helpful. And I think the other thing too that's helped me in the past is I've read a number of books on the act of actually writing, you know, a novel or writing a screenplay. And there's a number of books out there on doing that. You can do that and pick up. It's just the point is getting into, you know, trying to develop a sense of how a story works. What makes a story work, you know, is the conflict, is the emotion. So, and finding out what those building blocks are and then working from there from your own marketing story.
Well, thank you as always for your insight, Damien. And we will talk in a couple weeks for part three of the series on content strategy.
Looking forward to it, man. Thank you.
Thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of The Lead. We sure hope that you enjoyed the episode and that you're enjoying this series. And if you did, and if you are, we hope that you'll consider leaving us a rating or a review on iTunes. And don't forget, you can listen to The Lead on Stitcher as well. Just go to copyblogger.com/Stitcher and it will redirect you to The Lead page on Stitcher. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the third and final installment in our series on content strategy. And we're actually going to be taking a step back because we're not done learning about our audiences yet. In fact, there is one specific strategy for getting to know our audience that we haven't even covered yet, but that is invaluable. What is it? Tune into our next episode to find out.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. Lord, have mercy on my rough and rough.